Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
Thank you. Beautifully done. Great song. And that fits in so well with our theme, What is Sanity? All right. There we go. Now, first of all, I want to say that now this isn't about trying to be a therapist here and decide which is insane and which is sane. You know, I'm not qualified to do that. We're not going there. You know, if you're truly insane, there's people that can take care of that problem. But we're talking about the insanity, the spiritual insanity, the societal insanity that we live by and think it's completely normal. I want to investigate aspects of that today, okay? Because I think that's a very valid subject. And in fact, many of the great teachers of this planet have called us to be and invited us to be sane in an insane world. And it becomes insane when enough people buy into it as normal that we say it's normal when it's not really normal. Sanity, when you look at it up in the dictionary, comes from the same root as sanitation. Interesting, as sanity and sanitation. You know, because there's filth out there and in here, and we don't need it. We want to be clean. We're so sane. This means whole or sound, healthy, rational. And you know, the old saying was, "What is it? Cleanliness is next to godliness." See, they were right, weren't they? See, sanity and sanitation. So it's the idea of cleaning house, cleaning out all the junk and nonsense that really hampers me from being fully alive, fully empowered in myself. One meaning of the word and one definition from the Oxford English Dictionary is tendency to avoid extreme views, right? To be balanced. And we talk about the middle way in Buddhism between extremism. Jesus went through the narrow door and followed the narrow path, right? Which is between extremism again. The trouble with that, though, is when you're way out here, you think that they are extreme. When you're way out there, you think they're extreme, right? And we think we're normal over here, right? So it's really hard. Who's to say what's extreme? Because it's a very subjective test. The only way you could truly find it out for yourself is to come to center. And that's why we spend time in meditation, is to find that centeredness and understand what it means to be truly sane. Because otherwise, we could just throw these terms at other people, right? They're insane. How do I know it? Because I'm totally sane. Look at them. But I'm saying what they're saying about me. So, you know, we go around and around in circles. Ed Rabel, professor at Unity when I was in seminary, said there were three hallmarks to spiritual maturity. Three hallmarks to spiritual maturity. And these were his three. Intuition, being intuitive, good-hearted, and sane. Those are his three hallmarks of, are you a mature person spiritually? I kind of like it because, you know, when you're intuitive, you've moved from not just understanding it intellectually, right? You've moved into an intuitive, you're getting your wisdom from a deeper source than just your head, right? So that's the first hallmark, is where are you getting your information from? Is this coming from what you think, or is it coming from what you know deep within you? Because when you know something deeply within you, you're working at a deeper level. You're working at a more God level, I think. So I agree with that, right? There's that sense of intuitive awareness. Good-hearted. It doesn't matter how much awareness you've got, folks. If you're still a mean son of a gun, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how wise you are, unless you can put it into practice in a compassionate way, right? You agree? In other words, be good-hearted about it, right? Because there's nothing worse than having somebody know the truth and they want to lay a trip on you, right? How wise and arrogant they are about it, you know? Have you ever done that to somebody else, yourself? Ouch. Doesn't feel good, does it? I mean, we maybe do it when we don't know better. The sad thing is when we do know better and we're still doing it, right? Still being arrogant and instead of being good-hearted. Because good-hearted means generous too, I think. There's a generosity. My good is also your good. It's not that I'm puffing myself up. I want everybody to receive the good, right? That's good-heartedness. So intuitive to wisdom, but compassionate, which leads to sanity, which leads to the balance that we're talking about, right? That leads to that sense of reasonableness. Because there's another interpretation of what being sane is. It's being rational, right? Reasonable, avoiding extremes. Some of the most sane people that ever walked this planet were Buddha and Jesus, right? And they called out the insanity and the trance and the craziness that was all around them. By the way, Buddha never claimed anything. He never claimed, and people would ask him, are you a god? No, I'm not a god. You know, are you a special person? Are you Superman? No, I'm not Superman. Well, what are you? I'm awake. Which implied that before he became the Buddha, he was asleep. And as most of us are, right? We're sleepwalking through life. We're on autopilot. We're taking our information not from intuition, but from what somebody else told us, what the TV sells us. That, folks, is a form of insanity, right? Because we are called upon to find it out for ourselves. The Buddha beautifully said this. He said, look, just because I say this, don't believe me. Take what I say and put it into practice in your own life. See if it makes sense. If it does, great. If it doesn't, move on. And I love that, right? Because he's saying, don't just go to sleep again and trust me just because I think I've made it through. I want you to do what I've done, put into practice these techniques that I feel have helped me, but I want you to do it. Now, that is very, very empowering, because so much religion is the opposite, isn't it? Turn your mind off. You don't have to think anymore. Just follow me, right? How many spiritual teachers say that, unfortunately? How many religions say that? How many denominations? And this is what's refreshing about unity, is that we're a bunch of rugged individualists in the spiritual sense, aren't we? Yeah, we're pretty rugged, too. Rough around the edges sometimes. We're a bunch of black sheep, cats. You cannot herd cats, right? Yeah, a whole bunch of black sheep. Wow, that's a nice image, isn't it? Yeah. Misfits. But see, we're being called out of the trance into something different, right? That's what this is about. And the Buddha is a great way shower, is saying, put it into practice yourself. Look within your own being. Look to that intuitive awareness within your own being. And then act compassionately from that. Because the Buddha was, his whole being was compassion, right? He was enlightened, I think, awoke when he was 35. And then he spent the rest of his life, 45 years or so, teaching this. Helping others with compassion. Now, Jesus was the same, wasn't he? Except he did it in faster, you know. He only had 3 years from his enlightenment to they chopped him up. So he had to work fast. But it was the same thing. Couldn't help but share the truth that the kingdom of heaven, that's the ultimate sanity, right? Because if it's somewhere else, somebody's got it and they're controlling it. But when it's within you, it cannot be controlled. And it's not just within me, it's within you, it's within everyone. You will never hear a more fundamentalist or literal interpretation of the Bible quote Luke 17:21. It just doesn't fit in. The kingdom of heaven is within you. Yet in unity we love it. We quote it all the time, right? Because it's the center of our belief system. It's what the Buddha said, turn within, discover your own truth, right? Put it into practice. It's beautiful. It's limitless potential. It's opportunity. That's true sanity, isn't it? To claim my goods. But not just for myself, for everyone. This is the key, because, you know, sometimes we'll claim our own truth and then we'll think we got an angle on the truth, and then we become obnoxious about it. We don't want to go there. And we know people who've done that, laying trips on other people. I'm like, golly gosh, maybe we've done it ourselves. Well, I know you have, Robin, but that's okay. We love you anyway. At least she's laughing all the way to the bank on that one, yeah. You know, my wife refers to it, Wendy, refers to it as the IRS. You know, we have to check in with the IRS. individual responsibility for sanity on any given day, you know. And I love that phrase because that's what it is. Every day you wake up, you have an individual responsibility to do the same thing, right? To do the highest and best from your intuitive, good-hearted nature, yeah? And we've heard the phrase, and we admire it, punch above your weight, right? In using a boxing term, it's the idea that you are willing to risk, to dare to go into a higher weight division. It's more difficult to do that, yeah? He's punching above his weight. There's also such a thing as punching below your weight. That is when you know something, you know that there's a higher way, but you insist on going down there, right? You're still feeling resentment. You know, I know I love you unconditionally, but I don't want you to come to my party. Now, wait a minute. Is that punching below or above your weight?
A little bit of both.
Little bit of both. You're hoping for something higher, but then you go, all of a sudden you're going low with it.
Maybe you need to let that go.
Maybe we need to let that go. See, Jesus pointed it out. He said, when you put your hand to the plow, you can't turn back. And what he meant by that, in my estimation, is once you followed the higher way, once you found the way of sanity, right, the middle path again, the plow, then you'd be foolish to go back to an older way, a simpler, lesser, more negative, more egoic way, right? Because you've seen a higher, there's a responsibility. If you insist on going back, what happens? You can, but it's not going to be fun because there's a karmic consequence from it, right? You get stuck. You are stuck in that consciousness. We are always called to come up higher. The old metaphysicians called it the high watch, you know, holding the high watch, holding that highest and best that you could conceive of for yourself and others, right? That's true sanity, isn't it? Otherwise, you're just punching below your weight, you know? And unfortunately, it happens. We know better, but for some reason we're going to go down, do it anyway, aren't we? Because we're ornery, I guess. We're the black sheep. Don't tell me what to do. If I want to be low and mean, that's okay. But you know truth. All right, well, yeah. Have you noticed? Oh, sorry, go ahead. So what? That's an excellent point. She says we fluctuate. So now, what's the antidote for that then? When you find yourself at a lower vibration, take a look. Right, individual responsibility for sanity on any given day. Don't stay there too long. Right, come on back up. Yeah, we all go there sometimes. We have to remind ourselves what's really efficacious for ourselves and others, right? Generally, it's to do the generous thing, isn't it? If you're in doubt, be generous, right? Did somebody say kill him?
No.
If in doubt, kill him. Great. No, I don't think somebody said that. Say hello. Is that what you said? Oh, hello. Like, yeah, definitely. Have you noticed there's more George Carlin pieces now on Facebook and elsewhere than I've seen in a while? People seem to be putting up George Carlin. Remember him, he's the great iconoclastic comedian from years back. But, and I think he's been put up again because his brand of waking us up from the insanity is so apropos today in the world we're in right now and all that we're dealing with in our society. And we need that sometimes to wake ourselves up from the trance, right? From the crazy things that are going on. There's a sketch about Muhammad Ali that was up last week from George Carlin. And we, you know, we lift up Muhammad Ali because he was a great man and shifted consciousness in profound ways. And we can be grateful for that. But, you know, Carlin's saying that he earned his living from beating people up, you know. And he said, that's fine, he's had a right to, that's, you know, it's a free country, if he wants to beat people up, that's fine. But then the government told him that they wanted him to kill people. And he said, well, no, I only beat people up. I don't want to kill people. Then the government said, well, listen, man, if you don't want to kill people, you can't beat people up. So they took away his license, etc., put him in jail. But I love that because, you know, we understand what it means to be in the noble art of boxing, but bottom line is beating people up, right? And so there's a sort of insanity, but there's also an insanity about asking regular people to go to foreign countries and kill people, too. So when somebody like Carlin exposes that, you think, wait, I'm taking this as normal, that it's okay to be in this situation of endless war and whatever, and battle and struggle, but is it really sane? I'm glad that we have a word for this when it comes to nuclear weapons that really sums up the insanity of it. It's called MAD, isn't it? Mutually Assured Destruction. MAD! Which is the idea that we could blow everybody up and still survive. You know, it's probably not going to happen, because once we strike somebody, they're going to strike us, and we're all going to be dead, right? And that, luckily, is called MAD. The tragedy is that it exists, that we have the power to do that on our planet right now, right? To have mutually assured destruction. How many people think we got this UFOs out there? Next question. How come they haven't sat down with us yet? They have. Oh, excuse me. Well, I know they've come to some people. But I'm saying, you know, sit down with the governments or whatever. Or maybe they have. I don't know. But, you know, the reason they don't think they have is because we're not quite ready, folks. We're still in that old paradigm, you know, where we want to kill things. Why would anybody want to join us? Exactly. So it's a question of arising into a more sane consciousness before the superintelligences are ready to come. I wish I hadn't brought that one up, but that's okay. I've opened a can of worms. This is unity, I forgot, yeah. But waking up from the trance, you know, waking up from that there's a higher way. I love what President Obama said when he went to Hiroshima recently on the anniversary again of the dropping of the bomb, and talked in a very moral and loving tones about that there will be a day when we don't have to do this, when there will be no nuclear weapons. And he said, it probably won't happen in my lifetime, but we need to strive for it. And it was words I thought that were very beautiful and showed the way ahead, you know. We may not be there yet in our world, but one day we will be. One day that will be seen as insane, that we want to destroy everything on this planet, right? It'll be seen as insane, and we'll move up to that higher level of consciousness. What we're doing in churches like Unity and in teachings like this is to hold that consciousness, right? To be a critical mass of folks who see what's coming next for the planet. Because Jesus saw what was coming next 2,000 years ago. We're not quite up to where he came to, yeah? But we're still moving in that direction, yeah? And that's the point, isn't it? Individual responsibility for sanity on a daily basis, right? Whatever we can do. Here's another insane thing, and I know people are going to go, oh, no. Because I love them too. Cars. Automobiles. I mean, insane. Right? We love cars. I like cars. I like to drive my car. But they kill more people than all the wars in American history. You know, in the last 10 years or something, we've lost more people on the roads. And yet we say, oh, that's fine. You know, no problem. But, you know, a couple of terrorists come along and kill 10, 20 people. The end of the world has come. Thousands of people on the roads of Texas die a year. Oh, well. So a form of kind of societal insanity, isn't it? And I know we love our cars, and especially in Texas, we love our cars. Oh, trucks, whatever it is. Vehicles. What? There we go. Convenience rationalization, which leads us into crazy points of view sometimes, right? Because it's expedient. The other thing is in terms of religion. Unfortunately, religions that say we got the right answer and you got the wrong one, I can't buy into that. That for me is a form of insanity, because if I know God in any way, I know that God is limitless good, unconditional love, and loves everybody, right? He's not going to limit somebody. And I think there is a church down in the valley near Edinburgh that has 90% of all the people are going to be saved in their congregation. Yeah, sweet, huh? But I want to know where the other 10% are. Are they probably here, right? Yeah. But my belief is we're all going to be saved, if there is such a thing as saved, right? We don't need to be saved anyway, do we? We are loved unconditionally. We don't have to worry. God loves us. And that's true for every single being on this planet, I believe, right? And that's the sane point of view, I think, to move beyond that old sectarian. It's the same idea as the tribal idea of fighting people, isn't it? It all comes from the same cause, this idea that the universe is not safe and I have to protect myself. Separation, not oneness. But you cannot be intuitive, good-hearted, and sane if you hold to division, right? You can only be intuitive, good-hearted, and sane when you remember, well, there's only one of us here. We are all in this together. Come up higher. Come up into compassion. Like I say, if there's one thing you can do on any given day, be generous, right? Be generous with your time, your energy, with your givingness. Be there for someone. That's what the hugging thing is all about, isn't it? We're willing to hug. Isn't that what Amma is saying, I think? She's offering a hug in the place of separation, right? You could say, well, I don't need that. Or you could say, that sounds cool. I might check that out. Because there's this person who's unconditionally loving. She must be on a direct line from God, because she'll sit there and hug people day in and day out. If there's thousands of people, she'll hug everybody. And she won't just do it like a quickie. She hugs you for a while, you know. There we go. So there's a transformation that occurs, right, as a result of that. Let me conclude by reading a couple of passages from the person I consider to be one of the most sane people on the planet, and that is Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius was a Roman emperor. He was also a general, and he was fighting the Germans back in the 1st and 2nd century AD when he wrote down his thoughts at night. And later on, they were given the name Meditations. But they're basically a collection of his notes that he took late at night after he was getting ready for bed, as he was in the battle zone in the forests of Germany back in 2nd century AD. And he writes this: When you wake up in the morning, tell yourself, the people I deal with today will be meddling, ungrateful, arrogant, dishonest, jealous, and surly. They are like this because they can't tell good from evil. But I have seen the beauty of good and the ugliness of evil, and have recognized that the wrongdoer has a nature related to my own, not of the same blood or birth, perhaps, but of the same mind, and possessing a share of the divine. And so none of them can hurt me. No one can implicate me in ugliness. Nor can I feel angry at my relative or hate him, unless I decide to, right? Unless I buy into it. Unless I insist on punching below my weight and go in there with it. We were born to work together like feet, hands, and eyes, like the two rows of teeth, upper and lower. To obstruct each other is unnatural. To feel anger at someone, to turn your back on him, these are obstructions. Obstructions to who? Ourselves, yeah. We hurt ourselves when we refuse to be generous, right? When we want to hold on to resentments. It's better to do the generous act and let it go. Everything you're trying to reach by taking the long way round, you could have right now, this moment. And you know, many of us are still waiting for our ship to come in, aren't we? You know, when it's all going to be okay, you know, when I've got it all worked out. Until I was 40, I thought life was a rehearsal. I was rehearsing for life. And then at 40, I woke up and I thought, wait a minute, half my life's gone. The rehearsal's over. I better start living. It's showtime. You know, don't put it off. Everything you're trying to reach by taking the long way around, by putting it off, oh, it'll come tomorrow. We're all good at this, procrastinating. I'll get to it eventually, you know. I'm not quite ready yet. I haven't got enough money, etc., etc. You know, what a waste. You got to say, no, I'm going for it now. You know, I'm going to grasp it now. It can be yours right now, this moment, he says. If you'd only stop thwarting your own attempts. If you'd only let go of the past and trust the future to providence and guide the present towards reverence and justice. So I love that. If you'd only let go of the past. We say this in Unity all the time, don't we? Just let go. Let go of the past. Entrust the future to providence. God is in charge. You know, years ago when I first came to this church, it was tough. We were a tiny little church, and we never had enough money, and we were all kinds of stuff. And one of the people who was on the board at that time was Connie Logan Lefson. There she is today. And she gave me a piece of paper that had been laminated. And on it was an empty director's chair. And on that director's chair, there was a cone, you know, one of those horns, megaphone. And then on the back it said, God, that was the person who was sitting in this chair, and then at the bottom it says, God is in charge. Well, God wasn't there, but because God is everywhere. But she handed that to me. I still got it today. And it was one of those pivotal moments. You know, I thought, oh, wonderful. I can relax. Just because it doesn't appear that everything is going to be in perfect divine order, it still is. Yeah? And sometimes we can do that for somebody. We can give them something, and it'll shift everything. So I give thanks to Connie for, you've probably forgotten you gave me that, right? It's like many, many years ago. But it made a difference for me, so thank you for that. Let go and let God, right? That's what it was. God is in charge. And guide the present towards reverence and justice. Reverence, so you'll accept what you're allotted. Nature intended it for you, and you for it. Be reverent for it. Thank you. Thank you, God. And justice, so that you'll speak the truth frankly and without evasions and act as you should and as other people deserve. To be a person of integrity, IRS, individual responsibility for sanity every single day. Don't let anything deter you. Other people's misbehavior, your own misperceptions, what people will say, or the feelings of the body that covers you. And if, when it's time to depart, you shunt everything aside except your mind and the divinity within, then you'll be worthy of the world that made you. No longer an alien in your own land, no longer shocked by everyday events as if they were unheard of aberrations, no longer at the mercy of this or that. I love those last two statements. No longer shocked by everyday events. Turn on the TV. Oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that. Yes, you can. They did it before. They're going to do it again. Nothing's different. Give it up. Don't punch below your weight. Don't be in shock horror about it. Just say, oh yeah, right. Different story, but it's the same thing. You know, it's repeating itself, isn't it? No longer shocked by everyday events, as if they were unheard of aberrations, and no longer at the mercy of this and that. You know, Jesus was not at the mercy of anybody. Why not? Probably the greatest person on the planet who discovered this great expansive way of living, who was completely sane. Why was he not at the mercy? What did he discover? He knew his truth, right? He knew that it was an inside job. He found it within. The Father and he were one, so nothing could affect him. He had glorious resurrection over everything, right? He was not at the mercy of anything. And it was a radical freedom to live that freely. Wow. I mean, it's awesome. And he said, you can do it too. You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free, set you free. What a wonderful thing. The truth is that we have within us intuitive awareness, the possibility to be good-hearted and generous and compassionate, right? And to find that inherent sanity that is the hallmark of who we are as human beings on this planet. And from that, live the radically free life, you know? What a great week this is going to be, isn't it? Because we're going to put into practice, we're going to go to the IRS. We're going to the individual responsibility for sanity in our own personal lives. Amen. So we use the tool and the vehicle of meditation to take us to that interior place, to that still point, a place of silence, out of which every good thing comes. It seems to be empty, and yet it is perfectly full. Seems to be potential, and yet it is actualized. Seems to be a waste of time in our world that tells us we got to keep moving, keep acting. But it's the most effective thing we can do, to take time apart and to rest in that stillness. Because within that place is intuitive wisdom, good-hearted compassion, and true sanity. And it's always here. It's always available. Its nature is love. Its desire is helpfulness. It is true power. And so every time we choose to go into that interior awareness and feel the spaciousness of that still point, we are equipped. We loose energies and allow them to come forth into our everyday existence. We are connecting to the source of the infinite, doing ourselves a rich favor by accessing those qualities. And so we spend a moment now simply doing apparently nothing, just being in that presence, in the silence, in the silence. So we say thank you, God, for your presence as stillness and spaciousness and beauty and sweetness within us. May the energies that come from this still place, this place of possibility, may they come forth to bless us, guide us, help us to live the generous and the transformative life. We know we can do this. We've been equipped from the beginning. We are deeply grateful when we say thank you, God.
Thanks for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We sincerely thank you for your contribution, and we affirm with you, divine love through me blesses and multiplies all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive, and I am grateful.